Bears Robert Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy.
Mark, yes.
No. Mark, yes.
No, you're not on this one.
What?
What do you mean?
No. This is not you.
Not me?
It's with Robert Crane, just by himself. It's a Need to Know podcast, Express Edition.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from CIA Ups. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined by another returning guest, Chip Reeves. Chip, welcome.
Hey, Robert. Glad to be here.
I think, as we always do on our podcast here, I might get you to introduce yourself, even though you are a returning guest. Let everybody know who you are, what you do, and again, we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, let's see. I've been in the IT channel, 27 years now, long before I knew there was such a thing as an IT channel. I started as an IT consultant back in 89. I'm probably best known for starting the Computer Troubleshooters IT franchise back in 99. Sold that in 2012. Today, I run a small MSP in a rural part of South Carolina called Clever Techs. And I'm also the founder and president of Bigger Brains. We're an online training company that MSPs and IT consultants can sell to their end users.
So I think that why I've asked Chip to come on and what we're going to talk about is one of the things that I think is a very common thing that we're seeing out there is that we have probably more technology than we really need. I think a lot of people have so much technology in their business, but when you actually look and analyze it, they're only probably using, you know, if 10% of it, if 20% of it, and there's so much left undone. Now, I'm beginning to see this obviously more with things like Office 365 and Azure, where, you know, you've got this potential to run Skype for Business, Yammer, Power BI, all these additional options, and most people seem to just use just the email component of the suite that they're buying. So, I mean, what's your sort of thoughts on this, Chip? Is this something you see in your neck of the woods as well?
Well, yeah, it's been an object of fascination for me, I guess, for a while, especially with Bigger Brains. You know, when we started Bigger Brains, we were kind of looking at building out training courses that IT consultants could sell. And so there was a bit of a shotgun approach. We did some sales and marketing. We did some communication. There was some Microsoft Office. But one of the things that's really been a big demand for us from the marketplace has been productivity. And for us, that's especially around Microsoft Office and Office 365. And I'm just amazed by the amount of people or the amount of companies that have tools that they're investing in for their employees. Office 365 is a great example. That, you know, they buy the tool and they kind of sit it in place and expect the productivity to happen when really the users are kind of left to themselves to figure out how to make the best use of it for what they're looking to do. And I think really as IT consultants, we've not done a good job there either. You know, our role historically has been the speeds and feeds. It's been the guy with the screwdriver. It's been upgrading the hard drive. It's been cleaning off the viruses. And I don't think we've necessarily thought of ourselves as productivity enhancers, but I think there's such an opportunity there for us to help our customers get the benefit out of the technology that we're selling them. And quite frankly, if they don't, then there's going to come a time when they look at us and say, you know, what exactly are we paying you guys for?
Well, it's very interesting. I've got a bit of a story from my background. Is I remember that back in the day, we upgraded a small business server from 2003, say, to 2011, and basically also did a desktop refresh. So we updated from, you know, something like Windows 2000 to Windows 7, and also introduced, you know, Office 2010 from 2003. Now, all of that is a huge change. When you think of the difference from 2000 to 2007 with a different start menu, you think about Office with a ribbon. So I went to the business owner and basically said, look, you know, you're going to have to invest some time in training users and getting them familiar. You know, they're going to struggle with this new interface. And that the response I got back was, I don't know, users know how to use this and they can work it out on themselves. And it was like, I can assure you that Monday morning was pandemonium, because obviously none of them could do their job. They couldn't do bold, underline. They couldn't run the stuff they wanted to. And of course, the IT person, being the IT person, you end up getting whipped. And all I could do was point them to the manager and sort of say, look, you know, we did warn you about this. And I think that what we've seen is the technology has added more and more functions to obviously sell the product and to differentiate itself. But when I look at it, even to me, one of the key ones I see so much is Excel. You know, in Excel, you can use obviously the equal sum function to sum up across a number of cells. But I see people doing, you know, individual plus this, plus, 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 all the way through. And it's like when you show them how to use a function or do something that's really basic, it just, you know, makes such a huge difference. But I think you're right. I think the majority of the stuff now is about helping people understand the tools and understanding what's possible and actually go and actually dive deeper. Now, is this, do you think, caused by the fact the products have become too complex, or, you know, what's the sort of feeling? I mean, the products have the capabilities there, but are there just too many functions for people?
I don't know if it's too many functions. I think it's a lack of prioritization. You know, there's an article in the New York Times, actually, that came out today, very apropos for our discussion, called Why the Economic Payoff from Technology is So Elusive. And it's a really interesting article. It's a study, results from a study, that says despite the massive spending on technology in the last few years, and it specifically talks about areas like healthcare with electronic medical records and cloud computing with Office 365 and Google Apps and whatever else, we've had this massive spending in IT. In fact, I think it said IT spending is going to be at an all-time high this year, something like, they quoted $727 billion, but, you know, the number means nothing. It's too large. But yet, the last five-year period that's measured, 2011 through 2015, has seen the smallest productivity gain of any five-year period since 1982. And what's interesting is it talks about some of the technologies that have fueled big productivity increases in the past, things like electricity, cars, planes, antibiotics, and then more recently it talks about things like electric motors and the internet. And I think with some of these things, take the internet for example. I mean, when the internet came to life in the late 1990s, and yes, it's been around since the 70s and some of us were using it, but it really became a business standard, I would say, in the mid to late 1990s. The productivity improvements from having internet access, from having email, from having a web browser and websites were so easy. You know, it's kind of the low-hanging fruit, right? You didn't have to work that hard to get it. All of a sudden you had an email address and people could send you documents that way, and suddenly your life was a lot easier. I think that the productivity benefits of Microsoft Office, Office 365, and cloud computing more generally today are there, but they're not as easily grasped. And so I think it's entirely possible to do your job and to use these tools without really tapping into the productivity that's there. It's a little bit of an older story, but I always think about an engineering firm that I used to be an IT consultant for. This is going back to the late 1990s, but I still think it's appropriate. The group had a group of engineers and a group of architects, and there was one office manager. Her name was Jennifer, and she was considered the Microsoft Office expert of the company. And so whenever the engineers had a proposal, whenever they had client communications that needed to go out, that got handed to Jennifer, and she would type it in Word, or she would put it in Excel, and she would send it out. Well, she went on vacation, and they called me in because they needed to change a proposal that she had sent out the week before she went on vacation. The client just needed one thing added or changed. And they had gone to her computer and they had looked everywhere and they couldn't find the proposal. So they called me in as the IT guy to find this proposal on her computer. And I came out, and after a little bit of digging, what I found was Jennifer used Excel for the proposals. She had one proposal spreadsheet. Every time she did a new proposal, she typed over the last proposal spreadsheet. So there was no library of past proposals, she would type them into the spreadsheet and then print them out, and the hard copy was all they had. But even worse than that, as I started, you know, they asked, well, can you put this in for us? We're in a hurry. Can you type in this proposal? And sure, for $120 an hour, you want me to type? I'll type. So I started typing in the proposal into Excel, and as I changed the figures for each of the, you know, items, I noticed the total wasn't changing. And then next to her keyboard on her desk, I saw she had a desktop calculator. And I asked her about it when she got back from vacation, and she didn't know that Excel could calculate things for you. She would type in the numbers one by one, she would take the calculator, she would add them up, and then type the total into Excel. She just thought Excel was a great tic-tac-toe board, a place where you could lay all this stuff out. And yet she was considered the Microsoft Office guru of this company. I mean, she was the expert. She was the one that everybody came to get their Microsoft Office, you know, documents accomplished. I think that's kind of an extreme case, but I think with all of these new features and all of these new tools and all of these new capabilities that we have in things like Office 2016, Office 365, you know, going further with things like OneDrive and Azure, I think it's just a larger smorgasbord of things that users don't know about, but that they would benefit from if they did.
Well, I think also, too, part of it is that it's obviously information overload. There is just so many options, so many tools, so many apps, so many different ways of doing things. I think part of it, too, is that people are, you know, it's a bright, shiny object syndrome. It's like, oh, this is a new tool, I'll use this, and then no, then I go off. So rather than being focused, they tend to try and spread that knowledge thin across many, many products rather than going particularly deep. So the example I would have as a professional myself is that my move away from doing on-prem to doing cloud was part of focus. I was also, when I started doing cloud, thinking I would have to do, you know, AWS, Amazon, and Google Cloud as well to obviously pay the bills. But it's gone to the point now where it's even within the Microsoft stack that I focus in, it's a case of even that's too much now. I think that the real secret seems to be able to focus on, you know, using the tools and using them well. Now, obviously, there may be a better tool, there may be something that does the job better, and certainly have to be on the lookout for it. But I think that, again, it's better to investigate, go deep on the tool, learn that, and if that does the job, that's fantastic. So a good example that I have is around OneNote. I think OneNote is the most fantastic app that's ever been designed apart from Excel. And it's simple, it's basic. A lot of people look at it and say, oh, it's a toy. But used correctly, it is such a powerful tool. And I use it every day. I use it as a running diary. I'm able to access it on any device. It works like a CRM. It's all searchable. Sure, there's Evernote, which I use for a while. There's other things, but to me, that's proved to be really well. And I think that's the problem. There are just too many options, and people are caught running between the options rather than going deep on an individual item.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I find it's true of IT consultants as well. I mean, we're supposed to be the technology gurus. And for a lot of us, I think we sort of mentally categorize that as, knowing how to set up Active Directory and knowing how to set up servers, knowing how to, you know, recite the color coding for Cat5 cables in our sleep. But I think in today's environment, what customers could really benefit from is for us to have a better awareness of at least what type of tools are out there and what they do. You know, nobody can be a specialist in everything, to your point. But I think if we partner with other professionals who are experts with, say, Microsoft Access or with OneNote or with Azure, and if we know enough as a generalist, and maybe dive deep into one area, but if we know enough as a generalist to be able to say, when a customer presents us with a situation, we'd like to do better with this, or when we're looking at their environment and we see, you know, opportunities for productivity enhancement because of something that they're doing that could be done in a much better way, I think it's really important for us in our role of adding value to our customers to know about the sort of things that are out there. OneNote's a great example. I agree that it's one of the most powerful tools out there, but with bigger brains, we were actually talking to a large healthcare company, and we were talking about the types of courses that they'd be interested in. And this is not an IT professional, but it was a HR person. And of course, they've asked for Excel, and they've asked for Word, and they've asked for PowerPoint. And I suggested OneNote, and they said, well, we'll have to check with our IT department and see if they need it. And I said, no, OneNote is not something your IT department would use. I mean, they could use it. But OneNote is really something that, you know, it benefits everyone. And I had to give them a little lesson on what OneNote is. And this is a company that has Microsoft Office, and OneNote has been a standard part of most flavors of Microsoft Office for some time now. But I think people are definitely less familiar with it on a conceptual basis than they are, you know, the Word and Excel and PowerPoint and Outlook, kind of the Fab Four of the Office suite.
Well, part of it too is I think that, again, a lot of it is that when we look at the way that people work, they work in a very familiar way, and that's understandable. Human beings, you know, don't like change, like to do things the same old way. But I also think that part of it, you need to be dedicating, whether you're a business individual or an IT pro, you need to dedicate part of your time to actually discovery, to actually R&D. I think that it's now so important that you have to increase your learning, your skills, and that requires dedicated time. Now, part of that time, again, may seem as though it's wasted. So if you, you know, fiddle around with a product for a while, it may not fill the need. But again, I think that's adding to the you know, your knowledge base. But again, that can be bounded by the focus that you have. So if there's a new Microsoft product and you're in the Microsoft stack, then it's worthwhile investigating. But I think you're right. I think a lot of it is that people are far less skilled than they believe, and I think that they would be very surprised to see some of the power that these functions, these programs have. And also, I would suggest that there are now tools like If This Then That and Zapier that can now connect these disparate tools together to provide this productivity benefit. So the example I have in that respect is every time I write a blog post, If This Then That blasts it out to Twitter and LinkedIn, but it also takes a copy of that blog post and posts it to a OneNote notebook I have stored in OneDrive, so that A, I have an offline version that I can search, and B, I've got a backup of every post that I write automatically. So I think that's the sort of thing, and I don't see a lot of people educating themselves in that respect and trying to learn the products in any more depth. And part of it, I think, is driven by the fact that, you know, the overriding thing seems to be doing things the same old way, rather than looking at it and saying, well, how can I be more effective and get more free time? I think that, again, the distraction virus is filling up so much of people's time, and my overriding comment is look, we've got more technology than our parents had, and how much more than our grandparents had, but everybody's working 24/7, everybody's so busy, nobody's got time to sit down and have coffee with you. Is that really a better world that we've created for ourselves?
No, that's true, and that's part of that New York Times article today too, is talking about how so many of the productivity gains of the last 5 years, like, you know, faster internet and social media, have come at a cost as well. For example, you know, losing something like 90 minutes a day or 50 minutes a day to Facebook and Instagram and whatever the other social media sites are, you know, there's benefits there. But it's also, as you say, it's a distraction. It can be a real time suck, and you can get, you know, trapped in there and sometimes justify it, you know, in terms of, well, I'm, you know, doing some research, or I'm looking up a product for a client, or I'm learning how to do social media marketing for a client, or whatever. But yeah, we have to really think about whether that's really adding to our productivity.
Well, I think part of it too is there are now so many channels to receive communication. So you think about it, right? You think you've got, you know, you've got Skype, which we're talking on now. You've got, you know, email. You've got social media. You've got, you know, all these mechanisms: Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, the list just goes on and on and on and on. And you know, people set up accounts, then they've got to monitor them all, and they just keep adding to them. So again, I think in some respects we've created this monster ourselves. I don't think that they're people, unfortunately, they're hardwired to obviously want the new stuff, want stuff that's new. And you know, tools like, well, things like Facebook know this, and they exploit this, and they look at obviously keeping people in their environment to make revenue out of it.
Yeah, and it's not just the number of tools, it's also the capabilities of those tools. You know, we've With bigger brains, we started refilming our Office 365 master course back in February, and it should wrap up in the next week or two. But as we were filming it in March, literally we would film a module, and then a week later, Microsoft would release new features that negated what we just filmed, especially for things like Groups and Planner that came out while we were filming. In fact, we part of the reason why the course isn't out now is they just released the ability to do online chat with OneDrive and the online web apps, which we finished our OneDrive and online web apps modules. Now we have to go back and add those to them. We've come a long way. I remember when my first computer was an Osborne 1, and I don't mean to get into the old, you know, good old days talk, but the first piece of software that I used was WordStar, the word processing system, and it came with a leather-bound manual. I was thinking about that today. I mean, when's the last time you saw a leather-bound manual for any software product, or for that matter, when's the last time you saw a manual for any of these software products? There's just kind of an expectation that we're going to put these features in there. And you know, to their credit, Microsoft does put a good deal of effort into training, as does Google and some others, but you have to go find it. It's not always the easiest thing to find, and a lot of the smaller tools don't even go that far.
I would contend there that people don't read the manual. That's why they don't produce them anymore. I mean, it's nice to have for technical people who want to go in and spend the time, but I would contend that in today's world, people haven't got the attention span to sit down and read. And millennials, example, I don't think they even read any books at all. It's all video delivered. You know, it's all that sort of thing. So I think that, again, the way that things have changed, and obviously the other side of the coin, as you mentioned, is if you did a manual, when you finish, it's out of date. So then you've got to go and print it and do all that sort of stuff. So, look, I think it is really hard. And I think that... you know, it comes down to the individual developing their own learning process so that they can learn. Now, I think that the benefit that provides is those people that do, that have the discipline, that go on that constant learning journey or teaching, will stand out above the crowd, because to me, especially in the IT pro area, it's just so plain that the differences between those who are aware of that and those who aren't. So my example in that respect is PowerShell. The amount of IT professionals, our peers, that have no concept at all of PowerShell is just staggering. And it's such a important tool going forward.
Yeah, I've been surprised, and PowerShell is I would say a very IT-centric tool. I've been surprised by how many of our peers and how many of my competitors in the MSP world are much more clueless about just the broader concept of what Office 365 is. It's a bit strange for me because I spent most of my time as an IT professional in the Atlanta market, which is a fairly large city, you know, fairly up-to-date. And I moved 5-6 years ago to a rural part of South Carolina, which, well, all the same technology is available, but just the nature of the location is there's not the competition here that drives innovation. So we still, for example, we have a friendly competitor who we see from time to time, and we actually helped him out. He had some medical issues. We were covering some of his clients while he was in the hospital. And I ran into him at one of those clients, and he said, well, I had to come out to make sure their virus definitions updated and make sure their backup ran. I said, well, you don't have to drive to the client site to check on their virus definitions. He was completely unaware of the whole managed services side of things. He was completely unaware of any kind of really – he knew remote support existed, but it wasn't something that he used. And when I talked to him about Office 365 – he doesn't know what it is, and he's not alone. In our local area, there's 10 competitors. We're the only Microsoft Silver partner. We're the only one that's doing anything with Office 365. There are a lot of people out there who are still making their living, with a business model that's frankly 20 years old, and I think doing their clients a real disservice from that. As an IT professional, you can't allow yourself to petrify. You can't allow yourself to stagnate. You've got to constantly be moving forward, not just with the latest gadgets and gizmos, but looking for where technology is going to improve your customers' operations and then figuring out how you're going to make money doing it. And that's where I think the huge opportunity with Office 365, with PowerShell, with Azure, where all of that comes in for us over the next few years.
Well, I think part of it too is that, like I said, it's a golden opportunity. Typically, the old model was, you know, a 3-year cycle of updates, and there were some patches, but there wasn't any major feature updates. I think that, again, once you get into the world of Office 365 and Azure, then you look at not only doing VMs, virtual networks, the traditional infrastructure stuff, but then you then can simply add things like machine learning, logic apps, you know, all sorts of things that are possible there that were never available in that same stack. And I think it's very interesting now that the catch cry was, oh, you know, the cloud is stealing my business, and you know, I'll never do it. You know, I will never be able to do anything beyond that. Microsoft's taking my customers. But the more I look at it, it's like, you know what? The reality is that you're not prepared to learn and move on. And you know what? Some of the stuff you just can't do anymore. There's just no money, and it's become a commodity. And I think that this is sort of the first time that a lot of IT providers have actually got to implement some sort of formal training process of their own, where they have to reskill themselves. They've been able to get away with, you know, doing searches on the internet. They've been able to muddle their way through or use their existing knowledge. But you know what? Today, that's just not possible. They really have to redevelop. And I don't think a lot of people are able to do that. So the question that I get is, obviously, is you know, okay, let's say that someone wants to do that. The biggest stumbling block for that person that you indicated that didn't know managed services or Office 365 is, you know, where do you start? You know, that's the biggest question I see, is actually, where do I start? I mean, what's your sort of thinking on that? If you did want to take that step, is you know, in this environment that we live today, in the Office 365 and Azure world, you know, where the hell do you start?
Well, I think the biggest thing you've got to do is you've got to get outside of your own business and see what your peers are doing. And for my money, there's still no better way to do that than industry events. I mean, I know that they're, you know, some of the older events are dying off. Some of the newer events are a little more focused on, you know, this area or this vendor or that vendor. And that's okay. But I think that you've got to get out of your business, away from your business, and really be in an environment where you're learning from vendors about the products that are out there today, where you're learning from speakers about the tools and how to use the tools. I mean, I really, when I saw your presentation at SMB Nation, I think it was last year, on Azure Remote Apps, I'll be honest, I had no idea that existed. I had no idea you could run QuickBooks as a remote app in Azure. And that's you know, still something I don't know how to do, but now that I know it's there, I've had client situations where that's come up, and I was able to speak to them intelligently about, well, here's a way you could run QuickBooks Desktop Edition from multiple locations, and you know, still be able to work together. So just knowing that that exists, knowing that things like PowerShell and Power BI exist, and knowing that things like managed services, like BDR, like the CSP program, just knowing they exist and kind of thinking about how they pertain to my business, because not everything's going to be right for every business. I mean, we all have our own strengths and weaknesses. We all have our own marketplaces. We all have our own particular set of clientele that are going to have a unique set of needs. So you have to look at what's out there and take the bits and pieces that are going to apply to your business. But you've got to take something, because this is technology. And if you keep doing what you've always been doing, then it's going to decline and decline and decline. My moneymaker in the early days was selling hardware. There's nobody really making much money off selling hardware anymore. And then for a long time, the moneymaker was cleaning off viruses. And there's still some money out there in cleaning off viruses, but you know what? With Windows 10, with Windows 8 even, and with the better protection that's out there, that's less and less of the business. And quite frankly, it's never been, in my opinion, a desirable part of the business. You know, you don't want to be in a position where you're making money off your client's pain, you know, where you're having a bad month and you're hoping your clients to get a good infection so you'll make some more money. Much better to be in a situation where you're making money doing something that has a positive impact on your client's bottom line, and that's harder to do. It's harder to get into for a lot of us, because it's as much business-oriented as it is technical-oriented, but I think the opportunities are so much bigger.
Well, I think, you know, I think at the core of it, to me, the overriding thing has been that people just simply do not value their time. They do not appreciate how valuable their time is, and they think, oh, I can spend time, you know, wasted time doing this. And, you know, they again, do a lot of things which are urgent but not important. And I think Unfortunately, the human brain's wired that way. It takes a real discipline to sit down and say, you know what, this may be urgent, but there's no business benefit. There's no, you know, that really should wait. And I think that's what I'm seeing is this growth of distractions from all quarters overwhelms people, and they just don't have the ability to weed through it and say, you know what, I shouldn't be doing this, I shouldn't be paying attention to that, and they don't look at it as a plan. And unfortunately, like I said, I think the technology companies like, you know, maybe Google, like Facebook, and that are able to exploit that to their own benefit and really make revenue out of it. And in some cases, like I said, I think technology is actually being detrimental because, again, people are allowing it to be the boss. So, again, it's a very good example. A presentation that I give is about productivity. And, you know, I show people a picture of a mobile phone and say, you know what, this little device here, that's your boss. When it rings, you answer it. When the alarm goes off, you answer it. You go to bed with it sitting on your nightstand. When an email pops in, you answer it immediately. You constantly have to have it charging. If it's not available, then you start getting the shakes. It's interesting to see, you know, how different the world is from what we think it is. And again, this is connectivity. Everybody thinks they're connected, but you know, you sit on public transport and nobody talks to each other. They're all just using their screens. So it's like, again, I think the productivity side of it is a very good example. I think if people actually sat down and examined the productivity benefits they're getting from their technology, they'd be surprised. And I think that you could cut out a vast majority of it and even end up being more productive. So again, I think that's the real discipline. And I think that requires knowledge, but it also requires a lot of cases of saying, well, you know, as much as this is interesting, I can't do it or shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and I think you can take that corollary, and while that's definitely true as a business owner, it's also true for your employees. And as a business owner, we have to set our own priorities. We have to be mindful of those demands on our time and our prioritization and adjust our own lives accordingly in whatever system, you know, suits you. You know, some people do email-free zones during the day. Some people, you know, don't have Facebook or email on certain computers so they can, you know, focus on productivity. Whatever works for you. But be mindful that that's also true of your employees. In the e-learning world, which it's been interesting for me kind of coming from the IT side, having to learn this e-learning niche, and there's a whole ecosystem of e-learning and training and development conferences and vendors and everything just like we have on the IT side, but it's all e-learning focused. And the studies on the e-learning side show that when a company puts into place a solid training program where employees are motivated and incentivized and guided through appropriate training paths, learning paths towards skills that are going to improve productivity for the company generally, there's a massive productivity improvement for the company as a whole. The statistic that's passed around most often is 11.7%. That was from a American Society of Training and Development study a few years ago, but really I would say it's higher, because we also see that companies that have a very strong training program have profits that are as much as 50% higher than similar companies without a strong training program. So even if you're just a small MSP with a couple of employees, I think taking time, you know, once a week to have a little 30-minute class, or you know, setting up your employees with online training. I'd love to plug Bigger Brains, but also there's companies like Pluralsight and Lynda.com that may have more IT-specific training than what we have. Ours is very end-user focused, but I think that's also good for IT professionals to know, and our price is certainly better. But I think that has to be mandated from above. That has to be something that is baked into the company compensation scheme in some way, whether it's a carrot that you get some kind of perk for completing certain training. I know a lot of companies that will either bump your pay or give you a bonus if you get some kind of a certification, for example. I think that could be expanded to non-certification areas like Azure training, PowerShell training, or if it's a stick approach where if you're not meeting certain training goals, if you're not doing a certain number of hours or covering a certain number of courses or getting a certain number of certifications in a given quarter or a given year, that, you know, maybe you're put up you know, on the chopping block, or you're, you know, left out of certain company events or whatever the case may be.
Well, I think part of it too is that, you know, for me, one of the things that I've always done for a long time is, you know, we've been involved in the martial arts and training for a long time. And again, you know, these guys, these masters or whatever, they learn their whole life. You don't, it's never, you know, it's a never-ending process. And I think, unfortunately, it seems to be this myth that, you know, you finish school and that's the end of your learning, or you finish college, university, that's the end of your learning, or, you know, you start doing IT stuff and you learn server stuff and that's the end of it. I think it comes down to that, you know, basically what philosophy is. It's the love of learning. It's that ability to say, you know, I'm interested in this, I want to learn it. But I think the big difference is having the discipline to go about it in a structured manner. I think most people approach their learning, especially professionally, in a very random and haphazard way. And that, you know, random, doing something randomly produces random results and gets people very frustrated. So I think part of the secret to it is that if you want to advance and learn the skills, you know, you really need to have a discipline and a plan. And as you mentioned about it, especially for businesses, they need to have that as part of their process rather than just allowing employees to do it on their own. So again, you'll get the situation if you do allow people to do it on their own inside a business to learn at different levels and learn different things and be disparate. And I think that as much as everybody talks about social media and all this sharing, you know, between you and me and the million people who are listening to the podcast, I would suggest that we're not very good at sharing at all. We're not very good at documenting what we know of helping people that are coming behind us. We very much want to keep the information to ourselves, and that really doesn't benefit a lot of people. So to me, the ability to you know, sit down and document, even whether it's for yourself using something like OneNote, my personal example is that's why I write a blog. The reason I write a blog is not for everybody else, it's for me, so that if I ever need to refer to something, I can run a search and there it is, or I have documented it. So documenting it reinforces it in my brain and means that I can get to it. And if somebody else gets benefit to it, well and good, but I don't see a lot of that. I see a lot of people running around, repeating the same mistakes, doing the same thing over and over again, rather than having the discipline to, like I said, create a learning path and put something in place that they can then depend on and build on top of that. It's all very random from what I see.
Yeah, I think it's true. I mean, as you say, we tend to be motivated by the urgent, not the important. It takes a certain amount of discipline to look at your business, to look at your goals, to look at where you want to be as a company, and look at where you want each of your employees to be as a member of that team over, you know, the 3-month, 9-month, 1-year, 5-year periods, and then map out a strategy to get them the skills they need to get there.
Yeah, and I think that the important thing here is that technology is only as good as the operator. So the example I use for people is, look, I can give you the most up-to-date, advanced, you know, European sports car, and I will guarantee you cannot even start that car. I will guarantee you cannot start it because, again, there's a sequence. You need to obviously, you know, put the key in, turn it, put your foot on the brake, push the start button, click some other stuff, and away you go. So, you know, a hugely expensive car which has unlimited performance is useless unless you can get it off the, you know, get it off the line. So, again, that's the important thing.
And I think that's exactly the analogy of where a lot of companies are with Office 365 today. They've got a tremendous amount of power under the hood, and they're using it to go get groceries and come home.
Yeah, and I think that part of it is what's the solution here? I think the first thing is you can't do it all. You need to focus. And again, I think that what we're not good at, especially as IT people, is we're not good at learning from our peers. I think a lot of us, you know, we want to be seen as the smartest person in the room, and it becomes a challenge to outdo everybody else, where really you need to, I think, focus on what you're good at and share that and then take from others as well. But I think that's not something that IT people have generally been good at. I think that's reflected in the lack of social media access, you know, that ability. Even people who have IT, people that have social media accounts, don't generally tend to share their experiences. So again, it's a hard thing, and I think that you know, the way it's continuing with the pace of change is we run the risk that we're only going to be using, you know, less and less of the technology that it gives us the potential. But I suppose the way I look at it now is that's just more opportunity for those that can discipline themselves and can get involved and learn the product.
Yeah, I think in that New York Times article from today that they talk about how when they ask economists or ask productivity experts about whether this plateau of productivity we're in right now is going to last or not, the responses are grouped into what they call technology optimists and technology pessimists, with the technology pessimists saying that basically, yes, we have all this new technology, but it's not really doing anything for us. It's taking away as much as it's adding. But then the technology optimists who say that, you know, with every new technology, it's taken some time for us to figure out how to adapt it, for us to figure out how to really implement it into our workflow, into our daily routines, and into our company's overall operations. And I think that's where we are with a lot of this, you know, Office 365, cloud productivity suite. You know, it's really only been around for 4 or 5 years. It's just now starting to be a more common thing. And so I think my view is that we're going to see more productivity coming from that. And I think that companies that implement a training program are going to see it faster than those who don't.
Yeah, well, I think, again, the reality is I think we're reaching a point now where the, you know, the productivity, the gains of all this new technology are limited. There is a limit that people are finding because you just... people aren't implementing these new features. They aren't taking advantage of them. And it's like that's the limiting factor because... again, the most common thing I see is people just using Office 365 for email. They have purchased a suite, they've got all this other stuff available, but they just haven't implemented it for whatever they, you know, for whatever reason. Now, then you go, okay, well, why haven't you looked at it? And again, it generally comes back to the I'm too busy, we don't have enough time, all that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, I think that that sort of constant excuse just means you're unfocused. If you want to achieve those benefits, you need to focus, and part of that focus means that some of the stuff has to go. You just can't do everything that you want to do in the time period, and you have to come up with the options to do that. I think, unfortunately, that's what you know, is killing a lot of people when it comes to the productivity, is the ability to say no to a lot of stuff. And I suppose we've all been brought up that no is a harsh term and that we should be sharing and trying, you know, all this sort of stuff. But I think the greatest secret to, you know, what dealing with it today is obviously to say no and say, right, you know, I said no to this. This is what I need to focus on and look at it as a, you know, the constant development, but really go deep rather than go wide.
Yeah, there was a time in my business, in fact, it was around 1998, where we were a few years past the point where hardware had been our major profit center. And I had to look at things and say, should we still be selling hardware? And we decided no. It was, even though there was still some profit in it, it was taking too much of our time to accommodate, you know, the ordering from vendors and dealing with RMAs and all of that. So we chose to stop selling hardware. And of course, the day after we decided that, we had a client that wanted to buy 7 systems or something like that. We had to stick to our guns. I think we're at a similar inflection point for a lot of MSPs and IT consultants today, where we have to take a hard look at some of the things that have been money makers for us in the past and say, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. My future is going to be on this. And there's a lot of different places that future could go. It could be Azure. It could be cloud. It could be web design and SEO. It could be mobile devices. I mean, it could be security. There's a lot of different opportunities out there. But I think you can't be all things to all people, as you say, and it's time to you know, look really hard at your business and say, okay, what do I need to cut to make room for something new?
Well, I think part of that is, again, is that. But I think the secret to it then is to look at connecting with peers, connecting with other people to fill in those gaps. So you can certainly cover the whole bases, but a lot of it is you would then, you know, basically do a warm handoff to somebody else. So you need to look at people that will complement the skills that you have and pass you business and you pass them business. I think that's the way it's going. I don't think that you can be a master of all. You really have to focus on one product or one particular area and say no to a lot, but obviously build up relationships with others that can fill in for you in those areas, so that the customer can get a good response. And that means that freeing yourself up will give you the time to dedicate to do that focused training and whatever. But I agree with you. I think that one of the biggest opportunities around is training. I think that customers are now understanding that they do need to pay for it and more willing to pay for it. We're seeing ways to deliver it, like your products, basically online training, and that is, you know, that very important as well. And I think we need to see more people taking that up and basically investing in themselves to get this productivity benefit. Or otherwise, like I said, we're creating a huge array of products which very few people are using, and it's like then you begin to question, okay, well, what's the real benefit, what's the real payoff, why should they keep doing this if nobody's really using it? And I have personally been surprised, like I said, by the amount of times that people, just like you said, have no concept of the product, not even the very basis of it. So I don't know how they've gotten away with it. But I think a lot of it is that question of where do I start, how do I start? And I think we answer that by, you know, looking to others and sort of saying, well, how would you do that? Or actually investing, you know, we're willing to invest. And that's perhaps where people are falling down as well. I don't want to invest any money or any resources in myself. I'll pick it up somewhere along the line. Like I always have. I think that planning, that discipline needs to come into play.
Yep, I agree 100%.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that we need to round it off and let Chip get on with his day. Thank him for his time and his input on this topic. Again, Chip, if people want to follow up with you or follow what your business does or hopefully like engage you for some products, how can they find out more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Well, our main website is getbiggerbrains.com, but our IT consultant website is biggermsp.com. So lots of information there.
Cool. And for those who want to catch up with me, you can find me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA, or best place to find the information that I publish is on the blog, which is blog.ciaops.com. I'll take the opportunity to once again thank Chip for his time in his time zone, which I know can be a challenge working in the wide world that we are. But I appreciate his time. Thank you very much for doing that, Chip. And again, let us know your feedback on this episode, what you'd like to hear, what you'd like to see us discuss, and maybe the people as well. But with that, I'll thank you very much for listening to another episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.